Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
With that, we bring in the outstanding Adam Rittenberg from our good friends at ESPN. Adam, first of all, to you and your family, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Same to you and yours.
All right, so your thought process when you heard about James Franklin agreeing to a 10-year deal?
Yeah, I mean, it was something that I heard was coming for several weeks. And, you know, even though his name had continued to be mentioned for other jobs and was on candidate lists, it was increasingly likely that he was going to re-sign with Penn State. You know, that was the desire from the Penn State side, clearly, but also I think James at this point in his career, you know, with Penn State's recruiting class coming in and how close they had been in really all their losses this year, he feels that they're not far from that true breakthrough. And the idea of even going to a USC, for instance, and, you know, largely starting over with a roster, maybe taking 2 or 3 years to get it where he wants to go, I don't think that appealed to him as much as, you know, continuing to build on where he feels they are, which is not far away from competing for Big Ten championships and their first college football playoff spot.
James, at least through 8 years, has a track record here from 16 to 19. I mean, you know, they were New Year's Six games 3 different times. So if you had a 12-team playoff, that had made it all 4 years. Mel Tucker doesn't have that kind of track record. What's your thought on what's going on at Michigan State?
Well, I think, again, you know, people want to make it about Mel Tucker and what he hasn't done. But I think a lot of what, you know, this contract, if it comes to fruition, and it hasn't yet, but it should at some point in the near future, a lot of what it's about, Steve, is Michigan State essentially flexing and saying, hey, we're here, we have big boosters, we want to be a big-time player in college football, and if that means overpaying our coach to prevent him from maybe leaving for LSU, we're going to do that. I mean, let's not forget the history. Michigan State had the greatest coach of our time as its coach, Nick Saban, and they lost him to LSU. And while the program has rebounded in recent years, it took some time to even be, you know, kind of a relevant program in the Big Ten. So I think that was part of this, but just you had some people around that program that have this money, and they did not want to be picked by another school that wanted their coach. They want to continue to see where this goes with Mel Tucker. I doubt this will be the last time we hear his name mentioned for other openings, but they want to show that, hey, we are a serious player in college football, and we're willing to commit to our coach and our program to try to keep up with the Ohio States and the Michigans and the Penn States of the world, as well as some of the other teams nationally.
Which is interesting, because let's give the key name. One of the key names is Matt Ishbia, and we're talking about a guy you and I know. Because he'd been a walk-on the Michigan State basketball team when they won the title in 2000. The bottom line is you not only need big boosters, you need whales. I mean, not just big fish, you need whales. And Michigan State's trying to flex it with big whales like Ishbia, Dan Gilbert, people like that.
For sure. I mean, and you can make comparisons around the country. I mean, not, you know, Oregon is not a nationally relevant program without Phil Knight. And obviously that's a different situation because it's such a bigger company, but you need these types of people if you want to, you know, kind of emerge from being very good to being maybe nationally elite. And again, I don't know if Mel can get them there. I think he did a heck of a job this year with the roster and turning that around through the transfer portal. I think he's got an incredible resume as an assistant coach. If you really look at it, he was a defensive coordinator with 3 NFL teams and also has worked at all the big-time college programs, pretty much Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Ohio State. So you know, that's a resume that a lot of people would want to hire at LSU or even for the NFL. And I think the NFL will actually be interested in Mel either this year or in the near future. So that's something to watch. But from the Ishbia standpoint and from Michigan State standpoint, you know, this is how you elevate your profile as a program. You need the money behind it because there's so much money, as you know, elsewhere. You can't keep up if you don't have these types of people that are stepping up financially.
No question. How do you view the patience factor in athletic departments right now? And I'll use this as an example. Florida, as an example, when they go to spring practice, will have their 4th head coach in 8 years. So how are you looking at especially after the pandemic where everybody lost money, are you surprised at all by the patience factor?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. I think there's an unwillingness, Steve, when things go really bad, to ride it out. Where I think that you know, in the past there was more of a willingness to do that, and there is at some of the lower profile programs. But I would look at both Florida and Washington as places that went south in a hurry. And in Florida's case, you're talking about an accomplished head coach who was in the SEC title game last year and had a couple of top seven finishes in the first 2 years before that. I mean, Dan Mullen's tenure at Florida was successful, but it went south in such a rapid fashion that they couldn't ride it out. They couldn't give him a chance to fix it. And now they're obviously spending a lot of money to get rid of him, and they will spend a lot of money to hire his replacement and that coach's staff. So this is just the era we're in. I did think there would be more of an impact from the pandemic, but again, you're not talking about the school's budget. These athletic departments, especially in football, are run by the donors. And when you have donors who are willing to step up, that's how you get Gus Malzahn fired and Tom Herman fired and Dan Mullen fired and Jimmy Lake fired. I mean, that's how you get these guys to be ousted so quickly.
Excellent point. I agree with you completely about that, because I've been somewhat surprised by it as well. Because, you know, let's face it, everybody lost a lot of money in outs to go on top of it. Michigan, Ohio State, what kind of opinions have you formed midweek on them?
You know, I mean, going to the game, I'm excited to cover it. I've covered a lot of these duds over the years, as you know. And I'm trying to figure out the game plan for Michigan, because it seems like Ohio State, really since the Nebraska game, has turned it on. And if Ohio State plays like it did the last 2 weeks, it won't be close. I think for Michigan, you know, their calling card has been a couple of things. Ball control offense, the run game, not turning it over, you know, creating some plays with their defense, Aiden Hutchinson and Josh Ross and some of those other playmakers on that side of the ball. So they're going to have to make this a low possession game. They're going to have to win the turnover margin probably by two or more. And they're going to have to keep Ohio State off the field and make them work for points. I mean, you didn't see that from Michigan State, certainly, and you didn't see that from Purdue. But I think there are some things that Michigan can take from Penn State and from Nebraska defensively that they can apply to this game and try to get C.J. Stroud a little bit rattled. I think Michigan, you know, may not be as talented as Penn State is across the board defensively, but they're in that range. And if they can kind of take that same game plan, they obviously run the ball. Penn State doesn't. Can they control the clock a little bit and get it into the fourth quarter? Then you're playing at home, young Ohio State team. You get in their heads a little bit. And I do think the intangibles, Michigan's togetherness, their leadership, some of their culture is just better with this group than it has been for any other Harbaugh team, possibly with the exception of the 2016 team.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I concede exactly what you're talking about with them. Let me weigh in with you, or get you to weigh in on the possibility of a 12-team playoff. Are you for it, or are you against it, or neutral on it?
You know, I'm warming up to it. I don't think 12 is necessarily needed, and what worries me about it is the likelihood that two conferences will dominate the 12. And so, yeah, you're giving the group of five a spot, which is great. You know, you're having the Pac-12 in there, which I think is important because it's a whole region of the country that now isn't going to be represented for the fifth straight year. You're nationalizing it, but if the SEC has four and the Big Ten has four, I mean, it's really going to be those two leagues that get all the attention. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame will make it on a regular basis. I just think you can accomplish a lot of the things with eight that you can with 12 and not have one or two leagues just dominate the selections. But I understand the perspective of Greg Sankey as the SEC commissioner. I understand Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame athletic director. You know, this would virtually assure Notre Dame to get in unless they have a subpar season. Or they're going to make it most years. So I understand their view. I just worry that it's going to be, you know, two SEC, maybe Big Ten dominant.
Interesting. The other part, too, is if you're at eight, at least initially, you don't get any more money out of it, because ESPN does have the rights to all the New Year's Six bowl games. If you go to 12, I think the door is open to get more money, and I think right now everybody needs more money.
They do, and we were just talking about all these coaching contracts. So,
yeah.
So clearly they need some money. And I mean, listen, I love the idea of home playoff games. Bowl games are nice, and they're certainly part of the college football history. But I've learned to love college football. Seeing games on campus. I'm sure you feel the same way. I mean, you broadcast
Absolutely.
In one of the greatest settings in all of college football on a regular basis. You know, that, like, imagine a playoff game at Beaver Stadium. Imagine a playoff game at Michigan or at Notre Dame or, you know, at Washington or at Texas. I mean, you could just pick a place. It would be incredible. And so I would love to see that part of it come to fruition. I certainly don't want to see a 12-team playoff with no home campus sites.
Absolutely agree with you. You're absolutely right about that. Adam, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, and safe trip, safe travels, and enjoy the game on Saturday.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving.